Translation. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions, adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibhautika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One is still subject to birth, death, old age, and disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. In response, please. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions: adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibhautika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, and disease, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. According to the materialistic way of life, if a poor man, after labouring very, very hard, gets some material profit at the end of his life, he is considered a success, even though he again dies while suffering threefold miseries: adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibhautika. No one can escape the threefold miseries of materialistic life, namely, miseries pertaining to the body and mind, miseries pertaining to difficulties imposed by society, community, nation, and other living entities, and miseries inflicted upon us by natural disturbances from earthquakes, famines, droughts, floods, epidemics, and so on. If one works very hard suffering the threefold miseries, and then is successful in getting some small benefit, what is the value of this benefit? Besides that, even if a karmi is successful in accumulating some material wealth, he still cannot enjoy it, for he must die in bereavement. I have even seen a dying man begging a medical attendant to increase his life by 4 years so that he could complete his material plans. Of course, the medical man was unsuccessful in expanding the life of the man, who therefore died in great bereavement. Everyone must die in this way, and after one's mental concoction is taken into account by the laws of material nature, he is given another chance to fulfill his desires in a different body. Material plans for material happiness have no value, but under the spell of the illusory energy, we consider them extremely valuable. There were many politicians, social reformers, and philosophers who died very miserably without deriving any practical value from their material plans. Therefore, a sane and sensible man can never desire to work hard under the conditions of threefold miseries, only to die in disappointment. Om Giganti Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrijatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Taptakan Chanagorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Rishavanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Panchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vayevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Shri Vasudhi Gaura Bhaktavrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. The living entity tries to achieve happiness and rid himself. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong one. Materialistic activities are always mixed with three kinds of miserable conditions: adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibhautika. Therefore, even if one achieves some success by performing such activities, what is the benefit of this success? One is still subjected to birth, death, old age, disease, and reaction, and the reactions of his fruitive activities. So when I was coming back on the aeroplane from India, I was sat in between two women, actually. One was on the looking through the window, and you could see she'd had a eventful life. And she was, actually, when I sat down, she said, "I was hoping that you would sit at the side of me, because I used to go out with one Hare Krishna." And he turned out to be a right jerk. You know, he promised so much, and then he just took off. So actually, that's not really a Hare Krishna. These are, as she said, they're not really devotees. We're all devotees because we accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But obviously, devotee is very, what can you say, responsible. He realizes that he just cannot act the way he wants. And just do, you know, on the plea of being Krishna conscious, I'm transcendental Prabhu. So this happens quite often. And so we should understand this as just nonsense. But coming to the point is that she started to explain about a little bit about her life. And and it was, you can see, very, very, she was taking, every so often she'd take a sleeping pill and drop to sleep for a while. You know, it was, you can see, just suffering from beginning to end. And then she said, I asked her where she'd just been. "Oh, I've been to Cambodia." And I don't know much about Cambodia, but last time I heard about Cambodia, it was an infamous place. That was about 30 years ago, was it? 20 to 30 years ago. And I thought, what would you get out of Cambodia? But when she started showing me some pictures, you can see, actually, that's where the Vedic culture was. You know, we tend to think of India as just being a little triangle. But actually, it was much bigger than that. It went to the western side of West Pakistan, went all the way down to the island of Bali and further, even to as far as Fiji. So it was a huge dominion, huge kingdom. And you could see all the Vedic temples. It was beautiful. But then she started, she took pictures of where the Pol Pot regime was held. And they one called one field the killing field. And we're talking about adhibhautika now, misery is caused by other living entities. And we don't realize what a... He says that the material world is a very, very unsafe situation. And Prabhupada describes in one particular purport how it's like a drop of water is on a leaf and there's a wind blowing. I mean, what's the chance of it? Sooner or later, off it comes. But even though before the actual water drops off the leaf, we don't realize we're a precarious situation. When we think we can make nice, safe situation for ourselves, is that right? Tendency is to think we're the controller. It's very difficult to see anybody. Although every moment we're being controlled, somehow or other by the results of the Maya's illusory energy, we think we're in control. And so we're always working very hard. Intelligent people, they save some funds and for a rainy day or when they're going to retire, the insurance, medical insurance. Well, all this is actually really a useless waste of time. Why? Because what you told me emphasised this point. It said that 40% of that country were wiped out by the leader. 40% of the population. Can you imagine in this country, what's the population? 50 to 60 million. Is it 60? And, you know, 40% to 60, what's that? That's about 35 in it, something like that. No, it's about 25. So, 25 million people, how many have we got in here? Probably about 30 to 40, maybe. And so, what's 40% to 30? It's about 12 in it, something like that. So, in here, if we were living in Cambodia, there's 12 on us that are going to be finished. And what I said, why did he? Well, I didn't know much about Cambodia. It was so long ago. I said, why did he wipe them all out? He says, because if you wore a white collar or you wore glasses, he says, then you were executed immediately. Where's the logic behind it? Well, the logic is that they were the intelligentsia. What they call them in the communist camp, the bourgeois, is it? No, what the communists call the high class people. Yeah. And so anybody who was in that category, they were immediately executed. And it wasn't just a straightforward thing. They used to, obviously, like in Germany, the Nazis had got it so organized that the people who were going to be executed, they didn't know until the last moment. And similar in Cambodia. And then when they did realize, it was too late. They took them into the field, and then they blindfolded them. And then they didn't just shoot them, they actually bludgeoned them to death. They found the skulls with, you know, holes in the skull. They just, and most of them, they, you know, when they were chucked in the grave, they weren't dead. So then they poured DDT in to kill the smell and make sure everybody who was alive was finished off. So this is what adiabotica. We've got no control. I remember when I was young, I used to watch The Great War on the television. You remember that, anybody? Nobody's probably that old. It must have been a rerun. He was in the 60s. He was in the 60s, actually, and, you know, he used to show the First World War. God, what a hellish condition. They were just like huge bunkers where shells had gone off. That's all it was, for miles. You know, I don't know what the life expectancy was, but I heard that in the life expectancy, because I go to Russia, I pick up these things. It says in Volgograd, they used to call it Stalingrad. Now, when Hitler attacked Russia, you know, he wanted to defeat Stalin. It becomes a personal thing. Life doesn't matter anymore. Get him in there. And so he thought, if I conquer Stalingrad, then it'll demoralize the Russians. So that's why they put so much effort into it. And it says the Russians were pushed against the Volga. There was 10 yards in some places what they were holding onto, and the Germans were pushing against that. And, you know, the boats were coming in and putting more men on to keep the position. And that went on for 2 years. 2 years. They were just filing men in. And so the life expectancy was about 6 hours. You know, you got on there. They were shipping them out as fast as they shipped them in. That was Stalingrad. And then, so the point I'm making is that when I was watching this First World War film, at one point I thought I was probably about 8 years old, maybe 12 years old. And I suddenly felt really fearful. My body started shaking. I thought, these idiots who are running this country could send me out of there. And I was really, really frightened. Because what they showed you men, they were waiting at the trenches, and then there'd be the captain who'd fire a gun, and over they went, and they ran into machine guns. Crossfire, firing that way, firing that way. What chance have you got? And I saw one of the men, actually, I watched it, and he went up and immediately fell down. I thought, he's not wanting to go. The British, they shot a lot of their own men, actually, because they wouldn't go over the top. Krishna Chaitanya. So that's the world. This is the reality. We read these books, adiabotica, adiabotica. But no, it's a very dangerous situation. Adiatmica. There's so many things going off in this body. I think, what was it? Vishwambhari mentioned it yesterday, wasn't it? He was mentioning about, what is it? Rajdwara, the fire of death. And about, he didn't mention the, oh, he mentioned Kalyakana, the queen of what? The queen of the the soldiers, queen of old age, queen of time, sorry. And what's the, anybody, any other names for these different forces, what this chapter, what this part, the fifth canto mentions? There's Chandavega and his soldiers. He was like the commander-in-chief of the soldiers. And so that's happening at every moment. You don't know what's going on. There's so many things in this body. And at any time, one little thing, and we're finished. I remember my brother, he all of a sudden his throat started contracting for no reason at all. He got some allergy. The doctor came, you know, okay, I'm safe now. The doctor came, and he said, oh, he's all right. Just, you know, leave him for a little while, and he'll be okay. And so the doctor went away, and it started contracting more, and he could hardly breathe. They sent for another doctor, and he said, the other doctor, he ought to be, you know, struck off the list, and immediately give him some treatment. Another hour or so, he'd have been finished. So had he atmika, which is caused by our own body and mind. And the mind, what a problem. And what's the last one? Adi Bhautika, Adi Daivika. We're completely under the control of higher authority. We're trying to think, we feel free from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But every moment we're controlled. I was listening to a Prabhupada lecture the other day. He said, we're either in control of the Lord's lower energy or Krishna directly. We have our choice. So anyway, this is a little bit about Adi Bhautika, Adi Daivika, Adi Atmika. And I put a little bit on here. But what makes us suffer, that's the point. Why do we relate to these things? First thing it says, two verses early, it says that this is the Avadhuta Brahman speaking, if you remember. Narada Muni, he's met this Avadhuta Brahman who's laid like a python. And so he asked him, you can see that he's fat, and yet he's not doing anything. He's not looking for food. He says, you look quite jolly, you look as if you're self-realized. What's the situation? And so, because he asked very nicely, the Avadhuta Brahman starts to answer. And he starts talking about the actual situation in this material world. He says that all problems arise from what? What's the biggest problem? Where do all problems arise from? Bhayam dviti abhinivasata shat. Bhayam. Fear, it comes from bodily identification. Until we get off the bodily platform, then we're always going to be in a fearful condition. We're not the body. That's the first thing he said. Next thing he said that, why does it fear come from thinking we're the body? The body's subject to death. It's, yeah, at any moment, there's so many difficulties the body can give us. It's fallible. Next point, he says that, actually, people don't know it, but in the previous verse, the next verse, one said that it's just like water in a covered well. It's covered by grass, very dangerous. In India, they have these wells, and they don't ever fence anything off. They just let the grass grow over it, and if you're actually walking in the wrong situation, you're in the well. And he says that just like the water in the well, happiness is within the person. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, Sajya Kabanai. Sarvanadi Surichati Kariya Udai. That, you know, pure love for Krishna is eternally situated in the heart. It's not something we have to get from external sources. And how do we bring that happiness to bear? How does it come forward? By hearing and chanting. By hearing and chanting, then the living entity naturally awakens to his real self. So then it comes to this verse. Well, not say much about it because it's also Srivas Pandit's appearance day, so I thought I'd just say a little bit about Srivas Pandit. Lord Rishabhadev, he says to his 100 sons, Nayam Deho Deha Bhajamni Loke Kastan Kam Ahate Vid Bhajamte Tapo Divyam Putraka Yena Satvam. sujetya svatkama shokyam tvanantam. He's saying that the happiness derived in this material world is available to all species of life. In human form of life, if we just act like the animals, then we're not any better. We're going to get that happiness anyway. Prahlad Maharaj also says the same thing to his school friends. It's naturally got. Happiness naturally comes, distress naturally comes. So we shouldn't meditate on that. So here Rishabhadev is also telling his 100 sons, we should search for that Brahma-shokam, that spiritual happiness. Why? Because it's actually transcendental to temporary happiness and distress, and it lasts eternally. And so, what are the things that make us materially happy? What is the mechanism behind material happiness? Where does it come from and why? It comes from the mind. Is that right? Happiness is in the mind materially. In spiritual life, happiness is already, it's a natural thing that we feel. It's something which we don't have to meditate on. But material happiness means that there's two things I wrote down. Fulfilling a mental concoction. Now in the Bhagavad Gita it says that it has the symptoms of one who's self-realized on the spiritual platform. And it says that he says, how does he sit? How does he walk? How does he speak? What is his language? But the first answer that Lord Krishna gives him, he says he doesn't become affected by the mind. The mind will come up with so many mental concoctions, but he ignores them. Sometimes the mind will make us happy over the same situations that a few moments ago it made us miserable. So he's not trying to find happiness with the mind. And then the second point is that it's just like a Krura. He's an example of spiritual happiness. When he was sent by Kamsa, he had no reason to be happy. He was asked to go and deceive his worshipable Lord. Go to Vrindavan, bring Krishna and Balaram back. And then he told him, then we're going to have elephant Kulavayapida waiting for him. If he fails to kill him, then we've got wrestlers, Mustika and Chenura. And then if that fails, I've got all my soldiers. So he knew he was going for a mission where he had every reason to be unhappy. But what was his outlook? He understood Krishna is the supreme personality of a Godhead. Whatever he wants to happen will happen. This was just my opportunity to associate with the supreme personality of Godhead. And so he fixed his mind on what would happen when he reached Vrindavan. How Krishna would immediately come and greet him, sit him on a bed, wash his feet, feed him nicely and give him sweet words. And that's exactly what did happen when he arrived in Vrindavan. As we know, he saw Krishna's feet in the dust, and he immediately got down from his chariot and started rolling in the dust. And then eventually he came to Krishna's house, and Krishna did exactly what he was meditating on. So this is the way a devotee sees. He has to be meditating on the goal all the time, because that goal eventually manifests. Material goals, we may meditate on them, we may get the result, we may not get the result. It's all up in the air. After things we meditate on, they never happen. But by meditating like a Krura, he meditated on the goal of meeting Krishna, and exactly that happened. And so a devotee is like that. It's mentioned in the Bhagavatam how a devotee is like on a long journey. There's one traveller, he may be travelling on a long journey, but as soon as he gets home, so many problems while we're travelling, very difficult. But as soon as he gets home, he feels completely satisfied in the association of his loved ones. And so that's okay when we've got the goal, but what about the traveller who's still out there? But still, that traveller, he's thinking about the place he's going to reach. Is that right? Even in material terms, we can understand where material happiness comes from. That they're working all week and they're hating the situation 90% of the time. Some people, they've got a little bit of attraction for their job, but not many. It's usually like a real toil. And then they're thinking about that night when they can enjoy. They're thinking about that weekend when they can enjoy. They're thinking about in a few months' time when they've got a break from work and they can go away somewhere. They're meditating on that. So we can use that in a spiritual way. A devotee is hearing about Krishna, talking about Krishna, to remind him about Krishna, so he can remember what the goal is. And that goal becomes manifest in due course of time. So then, when we have that higher, this is called a higher taste. What's that verse? 259. Niha rasidem rasovaryam rasopyasya. When we get that higher ras. Krishna is the source of all ras. He says, rasovaisa. At this same wrestling match that Akrura was going to, he was reciprocating with so many different living entities in so many different ways, fulfilling their desires. So one who's meditating in the proper way, then Krishna will certainly fulfill that desire. How did the restless see Krishna? If we want to see Krishna that way, that's how we can see Krishna. It was like a thunderbolt. How did Kamsa see Krishna? Death personified. How did the ladies see Krishna? They saw him as Cupid. But even more beautiful than Cupid. So when we're meditating on this material world, then we see that side of Krishna, the horrible side, ghastly form of material nature. So devotees learning to see the and meditate on Krishna in his pastimes in Vrindavan. And the and the other thing about material happiness is what? What's another aspect? It's just a relief from some suffering condition. We think we're happy when we've got out of some difficulty, that's all. So these are the two things I gleaned from that. So the goal is to control the mind. Yato, yato, nishchalati, manashcha, anchalam ashritam, tato, tato, nayam, yat. How does it go? Yato yato nishchalati manaschanchalam ashitam tatashtato nyamnyat. What's the last line? Atmana eva vishamnayat. That one has to withdraw the mind from material thought, from seeing things in a material way, and seeing the goal of what he's doing, seeing the spiritual side. And then prashantamana samyenam yoginam sukam uttamam upaycha shanta rajasam Brahma Bhuta Akalmasam. And then that devotee, says the yogi, attains the highest perfection of transcendental happiness. So that happiness is available, what it's saying is available now. It's a matter of controlling the mind and fixing it on the goal of life. Fixing it on Krishna. This is what's that verse? I can't remember. Yena tena prakarine mana Krishna neveshayat. Sarva vidhi nishedeshu etaya evakinkara. That the conclusion of all the scriptures, and it supersedes all other directions given in the scriptures, is that we should always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. Everything else is subservient to this one instruction. And in this way we can break this materialistic way of life, this materialistic thought, and we rise above these threefold miseries, adhyatmika, adhidaivika, and adhibhautika. The mind, control of the mind at all times, fixing the mind on Krishna. Prabhupada said, we perform devotional service in Krishna consciousness. This is the point. We can externally perform devotional service, but it becomes a ritualistic activity. But when we perform it with our mind fixed on Krishna, then it becomes actual real devotional service. So today is Srivas Thakur's appearance day. And so he was one of the Panchatattva. He was an expansion of Narada Muni. And he was called the devotional. Lord Chaitanya is devotional, is a form of the Lord. What's that verse? I'm thinking of the Sanskrit word. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya is a devotee himself. Nityananda is his expansion, Swarup Shakti. and then Advaita Acharya. Nityananda is Swarup Shakti. Lord Chaitanya is Rupa, Swarupa. Lord Chaitanya is Rupa, Nityananda is Swarupa, expansion of a devotee. Advaita Acharya is the incarnation of the Lord, avatar. Gadadhar is the devotional energy of the Lord, and Srivas is the incarnation of a devotee, pure devotee, sorry. And so he showed these pastimes with Lord Chaitanya. These very nice pastimes. Srivas was a very exalted devotee, and one particular pastime we all know, how he had one son. He used to all the kirtans. Before Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he performed kirtan in closed doors, behind closed doors. And he used to be in Srivas's house, Srivasangam. And one day, all the ladies in the inner house of the inner sanctum of the house were sort of wailing and crying. And Srivas was just outside the door, and Lord Chaitanya was having an ecstatic kirtan. So he went in to see what was the matter. And all the ladies, he could see immediately that one of his sons had died. And so it's explained how Srivas was a very, very sober devotee, and immediately preached to to his wife and all the ladies. He said that, you know, to die in the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead while he's hearing kirtan, how can this be inauspicious? And even if you feel, actually, in that frame of mind where you want to lament, don't lament now. Lord Chaitanya is experiencing great happiness in kirtan. If you spoil his happiness, then I'll immediately go and run and jump in the Ganga. So after Lord Chaitanya, so they followed his instruction. And he gave many nice instructions to them, actually. But then after the kirtan was over, Lord Chaitanya said, Srivas, I don't feel the same ecstasy as I usually feel in kirtan. There's something happened in this place. What's the... And Srivas wouldn't tell him. And then some of Srivas's friends, they spoke up, said, Srivas's son has died during the night, Lord. Is this right, Srivas? And Srivas was quiet. And then Srivas began to speak and said, yeah, it's better that my son dies in this situation. He says, I didn't want you to be disturbed. If you were disturbed, that would be more painful to me than death. And Lord Chaitanya began to cry. And he said, how can I give up such a confidential servant as yourself? So this is the relationship of the devotee. He's so much fixed on this transcendental platform that even the death of Adibhautika. Somebody else calls it. When somebody dies, they're causing you distress. Even such a severe situation, Srivas was fixed. And so this is dear to the Lord. It says in the Chaitanya Chaitamrita that, what's that verse about austerity? About tapasya? Mahaprabhura gat bhakti ganera vairagya padam. Yaam dehi Krishna gora bhagav. Mahaprabhura bhakti ganera. Vairagya padam, Yahandaki Krishna Anna, Vairagya padam. He said, when Lord Chaitanya sees the renunciation of his devotees, he says, first of all, renunciation is a basic principle which sustains the life of Lord Chaitanya's devotees. He says, when Lord Chaitanya sees that renunciation, he becomes extremely pleased. And so I think this is a real renunciation. Lord Krishna said to Arjuna, you can control so many things, you can fight with so many weapons, but if you can control the mind, then I will really call you a warrior. Mahabaho, that's real warrior, one who can control the mind. And so this is Srinivas's input to this class. He showed us by his personal example, Srivas Thakur. Even the relatives of Srivas, the relative of a devotee is also very fortunate. Trivast Akor had one niece, a 4-year-old niece they call Narayani. And Lord Chaitanya wanted to give her a benediction. And everybody was in the house, and he said to Narayani, "Start chanting the Hare Krishna mantra in great ecstatic love." Little 4-year-old girl. And she started chanting the Hare Krishna mantra and wailing in ecstasy. So there were tears coming from her eyes, and so many tears that she drenched all her body, and there were a puddle of tears on the floor. And then when everybody saw her, everybody else became wrapped up in ecstasy. And so this is the nature of devotional service. We cannot take it, but when we please Krishna by our proper execution and by our austerity in trying to implement this process, then it becomes, Krishna can immediately benedict. And it's even with a four-year-old child. So what to speak of anybody else? There are some more pastimes. Maybe we should say a few pastimes more because it's a very special day. also, sometimes a devotee, he can also correct the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He gives instruction to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's one example where when Nimai was a young boy, he was preaching very nicely. He knew the logic, grammar, so many things very well. But according to Srivasa's calculation, he was a Vaishnava. He saw that he's becoming very proud. And so actually Srivasa preached to him. He said, "What's the purpose of all? What's the purpose of knowledge?" He says, "You think you know so much. The purpose of knowledge is to become simple and become humble." He said, "Become a devotee." And so this was actually a turning point in Lord Chaitanya's outlook on the purpose of learning. Later on, of course, Lord Chaitanya started to practice devotional life. But at that time, he was still on the platform of developing jnana and renunciation. Okay, so we can stop there.